I think we should start. Let me first start by appreciating the work that the committee has been executing since members of parliament came back to the National Assembly after a short recess. I have been informed on a daily basis or from time to time of the developments in the committee. To that effect, I want to thank Honorable Speaker for continuing to steer the ship, and obviously all of our committee members for showing the high level of discipline to take all the presentations that were supposed to be made to us so that we can be able to make a proper determination in terms of our report to Parliament. Today, I am told and I've been advised that we are going to take a report or a presentation by the Auditor General's Office on audit outcomes of National Treasury and SARS. But equally, it would appear we're just going to take a report in the main on National Treasury, not SARS. I'm not sure whether it's because they've done a very bad job or a good job that we've got nothing to report about. Would await with eagerness to hear from yourself. I think let me take this opportunity to welcome I think it's Mr. Tami Davishi, Senior Manager in the Office of the Auditor General. I'm not sure if Wusim Sibi is here, Business Executive. Is he here? Or is okay. Oh, which is the big man? Okay, all right. Okay. So we're in your hands. And I've looked at your presentation. It's very inspiring in the sense that it is very, very short. Thank you. Over to you, Tani.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, Chair, I'd like to apologize for the issue that the focus will be mainly on National Treasury as compared to SARS. Based on the fact that initially when we got the communication from the Secretary, the communication mentioned that it will be National Treasury and SARS-SA that's going to be dealt with today. But then it subsequently changed to SARS. We don't know how. So the preparations initially were like based on National Treasury and SARS-SA and not SARS. However, I'll just quickly take you through the slide that I actually prepared, which is going to be the national, the audit outcome of National Treasury. And on SARS, I'll just point out the nature of the audit report that they got. Then nothing more in that regard has been prepared. I think the first page, after the cover page on the slide, the reputation and promise of the Auditor General of South Africa. I think we all fully aware of that by now. And moving over to the next page, it says we talk about the National Treasury, the opinion. In the year 2009-10, the National Treasury obtained a financially unqualified audit report with no findings on predetermined objectives and compliance. In the year 10-11, National Treasury got financially unqualified opinion with findings on predetermined objectives and compliance. Where else SARS got a financially unqualified opinion with no findings on both predetermined objectives and compliance for both financial years. On that note, I'll quickly move to the drivers of the audit outcome for the National Treasury audit. The biggest issue that was encountered in the National Treasury audit.
Maybe before you proceed, just for clarity, you'll proceed with your presentation.
Thank you.
You say in terms of communication, the communication that you received, or communicate that you received, in terms of this presentation, it indicated National Treasury and SAS, not SAS.
Not SAS. One of the which said SAS, the only quote that was in the yesterday morning, the initial one that we had from last week, that SAS.
Okay. We'll have to deal with the issue of SAS later on then. We'll have to find a way. Not today.
Yeah. I think that
okay.
Will be fine.
So I just wanted to make sure that it's on record.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. The major issues that we picked up in the audit outcomes for the 10-11 financial year were the expenditure incurred in contravention of the Special Pensions Act, as well as paragraph 8.2.1 and 8.2.2 of the Treasury Regulation. Then there was a failure to prepare adequate quarterly reports on the progress made in achieving the measurable objectives and targets as required by the Treasury Regulation 5.3.1. Then the next issue was the financial statements submitted for auditing were not prepared in all material respects with the departmental financial reporting framework prescribed by the National Treasury. And the last issue was that the accounting officer did not submit the required performance report as required in terms of the General Notice 1111 of 2010 issued in the Government Gazette number 33872 of 15 December 2011. Maybe just to paint like a high-level picture and not drilling down to details, I'll touch on each one of those just at a high level. The expenditure incurred in contravention of the Special Pensions Act, it relates to some SIU investigations, which later on revealed that the Special Pensions Act was not followed, and as a result, there were some pension funds that were paid which were irregular, and some were found to be sort of fraudulent. And paragraph 8.2.1 refers to a situation where the deviation was not approved by the accounting officer, and issues where the deviations to source the suppliers were not actually taken care of in terms of the required level of approval within the entity. The issue on the failure to prepare adequate quarterly reports, to be precise, when we went and audited National Treasury, we only got one set of quarterly reports instead of four quarters. It's only one that we obtained out of the four. The financial statements submitted for auditing that were not prepared, here we looked at the number of material adjustments that had to be made subsequent to the audit process. In other words, the errors that were identified by the audit process in those financial statements. And then lastly, the accounting officer did not submit the required report. In other words, at the end of the year, when the financial statements are submitted, they should be submitted together with the annual report, which is still in draft at that point, for auditing to the Office of the Auditor General, and that did not occur as required. And I think at that point, that's just the high-level issues that we picked up, and I thank you, and I think at this point, if there's any question, I'll be glad to sort of see if I can answer the question.
Let me just also welcome Dr. Luyenge. The last time I saw him, he was observing elections in some part of the continent. Instead of you welcoming me back, I must welcome him. Thank you. Honorable members, I think there is a report. I don't know how we deal with it, but I think it would be important that we reflect on some, because a very important presentation that we're having. It's not just about compliance matters. To us, it means more than that. Issues of quarterly reports are very, very important. It may be a reflection on us in terms of Parliament and our oversight role in terms of those issues. But let me leave it to honourable members to engage with the presentation. Over to you, honourable members, Dr. Luyenge, honourable George, honourable Biza.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome you back from the information I have that you were trying to bring some dollars back home. Chair, let me first appreciate this elaborate report. Though I got it towards the tail end, but I did receive exactly what was actually the report about. Say we are dealing with National Treasury. I think National Treasury takes the position of AD over other departments. So the issues that have been raised here about reporting, I don't think it's like National Treasury. I never expected such a finding or failure by National Treasury, but it is good. Let me commend the leadership of the committee for us to have this understanding, because in most cases I've been of the understanding that says National Treasury has got all the support, finances and everything because of that cut across the mandate. I don't know whether National Treasury does engage AG on matters that affect the department and the entire mandate of AG, because that is what is expected. So if I can ask from the AG as to whether they have any meetings that they have with National Treasury in relation to their operation. Then the last issue, Chair, that I want to pose to AG, is there any mechanism that can be employed by AG to ensure that as they execute their mandate, it doesn't necessarily focus on the compliance issues, but it must be reflecting on the outcome so that it can be outcome-based. Does it respond to the needs of the country, the service delivery and everything? Not necessarily about the reports that you're getting, the receipts, the invoices, and every step, and processes are being followed or not, but what the outcome is. The last cent has been spent, but has it actually made any difference to the ordinary person? Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Auditor General for your presentation. I just wanted to ask about the irregular expenditure on page 124. It was 11 million rand, and it was in contravention of the Special Pensions Act. I'd just like to know exactly what the contravention was, because I remember we worked on that legislation. And then, I think maybe to echo the sentiments made by Dr. Luyenge, is I was very, very disappointed to see this in this report, I must say. Something I'd never expected to see in an audit report from the National Treasury, if you look at their history. But be that as it may, here the things are. And also, it says here on the last page of the report, 126, it talks about investigations. Now, we'll ask the National Treasury when we see them later on this afternoon about these things. But I'd like to know if you are involved in these investigations at all. And then also, finally, on the procurement process, the Special Investigations Unit recently said that 30 billion rand leaks out of the procurement process on an annual basis. Now, I know that the National Treasury is in charge of the procurement process, and it is a very difficult one to follow. But how far does the Auditor General drill down into the procurement process? Is it per department, or do you follow the trail, you follow the money from the Treasury? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Pizza.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. George has covered my point on special pensions. I just want to ask the AG Chairperson to give us an example, especially on the discrepancies that they discovered on the quarterly reports vis-a-vis the survey in terms of the alignment of the outcomes. And also if the National Treasury has responded to the points of emphasis that we have raised with them in this report. Thank you.
Mr. Divish, it's your turn. We intended to. I had noted three hands. Madam,
no, that's fine, but it's because it's not in the presentation, so I don't know whether it's proper whether we ask whatever the general report. If you can ask questions from the general report of the Auditor General, either than the presentation. I was not too sure.
All right. Let me respond to the three, and then we'll take another round of questions. I think it should be in order.
Okay. I think the first question here was, does National Treasury have any meetings with the Auditor General with respect to the operations of the entity? Am I correct?
Nothing.
Okay. We do have meetings.
We do hold meetings with the.
Of course, we do.
Okay, thank you. I said my understanding of the question was that does National Treasury have meetings with the Auditor General in relation with the operations of the entity? And to answer that question, I'd say we do hold meetings with the National Treasury, and in fact, if one would recall from the previous year, we've got what we call quarterly interventions, where we meet with not National Treasury alone, but with all the government spheres on a quarterly basis, where we discuss the commitments. In other words, we looked at the previous year's management reports and all other reports that we issued, and then we let the client give us commitments to say, we as the client, we're committing to resolve the issues that we picked up in these management reports going forward. And then on those quarterly basis, when we come back, we come and we discuss how far is the client in actually addressing all those issues that were picked up. And then only at the end do we then come in and audit the processes. Then the second question was, are there any mechanisms employed to ensure that the mandate reflect on the needs and the service delivery and not just compliance? I think recently, with the introduction of the audit of the predetermined objectives, that's where we're actually driving towards going forward. But now, as I'm speaking to you, there's an audit that's carrying on called the audit on the readiness of the government departments to report on the predetermined objectives. So what we want to do is, as the AG, we want to take the issue of predetermined objectives a level further, where we'll actually drill down to the issues of service delivery, and at that point, that will be elevated to be an opinion. Because currently, if you look at our opinion in terms of the predetermined objective, it only ends in the management report, where we say these are where the issues are up to scratch, they're reporting adequately and appropriately. And if you go to the audit report, we also mention, without changing the opinion, whether there is a system in place. However, once that audit confirms that the government is ready to do that, we're going to take it down to that level, and we're going to start sort of expressing an opinion. In other words, even if the financial statements are correct, if the predetermined objectives does not indicate any impact on service delivery, we're going to qualify the entities.
So that's where we're driving to. But before we do that, we wanted to assess whether the department and the entities are actually ready to sort of measure that, because the biggest issue is measuring the impact. Then the third question, Chair, was the irregular expenditure and contravention of the Special Pension Act. What was it all about? This Special Pensions Act, the regular expenditures that were picked up were, it was actually a number of them, and some of them related to a situation on who qualifies to get a pension in terms of that act. And according to that act, the specific language says if you are actually found guilty of having committed a Schedule 1 offense, if I'm not mistaken, you're not supposed to get that pension. There's a number of individuals that actually did get access. Even though they had Schedule 1 offenses, they did get the pension fund. And in addition to that, the SIU Nexus, and the, I forgot the name of one other entity that carried their own investigation as well after the presidential proclamation, they actually sent a document to National Treasury to say the following pension payment should be stopped. For whatever reason, there's a certain number that was stopped, but not the whole bulk was stopped. Some of them carried on being paid. That was the biggest issue. And I think the other one was the issue around where some of the recommendations that were made by the evaluation committee said, after having evaluated all the information that the committee, I mean, after having evaluated the information that was presented in front of the committee, we are not entirely satisfied that this person did actually was involved in the power struggle. And we recommend that this person shouldn't be paid a pension at all. But then going forward, that person is getting a pension. So it's actually contravening the whole of the Special Pensions Act. Because if you look at the Special Pensions Act, it lays the process and how should it be paid, what the approval levels and all that sort of things. So those are all the issues that are coming out of that. And then the issue of the investigations, are we involved in the investigations at all? I'd say as the Auditor General, we only get involved in the investigations right at the end when we evaluate the reports that the investigators give to the entities and evaluate the impact thereof on our audit reports. And the reason, I think, being mainly that in terms of our powers to carry out the investigation are limited to some extent. I mean, some of the things that the SIU can do, we cannot even perform, not even half of that. There's some information that we cannot get access to. And worst of all, these, they are like limitations, which is, I think, it's why when you look at the trend now, a lot of the investigation or when people want to blow a whistle, some of them don't even bother coming to the Auditor General. They just run directly to the public protector. But people don't understand that as the AG, there's some limitations. In our investigations unit, we don't have that power as the SIU have. I think that's the biggest limitation. And the issue of how far do we drill down in terms of the government entities or other government departments when it comes to the funding, where it was reported recently that I think it's about 30 billion. I think the biggest issue there, number one, is the limitations that are actually being brought about by the auditing process. Firstly, in the auditing process, we audit on a sample basis. We don't cover all the expenditure in an entity. We just select a sample and then we go and test the sample. Now, in looking at the sample that we test the sample up to a point where we go and we look at the predetermined objectives, whether the money was actually used for the reasons that it was actually given to the entity for. And if you find that, for an example, the process was not followed or the money was not used for what it was supposed to be used for, the only thing that the Auditor General can do in that case is to report it as an unauthorized expenditure if it's a department. But then if it's a public entity, then it's going to fall back onto the irregular expenditure. So that's the point where the Auditor General takes it up to. But if you go now to the PFMA is specific. It says if a department has incurred an irregular expenditure or an unauthorized expenditure,
is the accounting officer's responsibility to investigate the reasons thereof. So if the AG does not get any request, and by the way, I'll put it on record that we do sometimes get requests for investigation, and which is the case where in most of the time we tell the client whether to take it outside of the AG or we're going to engage on that investigation ourselves. For those small investigations where we see that it is process related and what and things like that, we are fast and we quick in doing that. We can do that investigation. But for the bulk of the investigation, we don't have the powers and the mandate to do those. So I think up until a point where we are able to express an opinion on the payment objectives, I cannot tie myself up and say we're doing everything like 100% to satisfy ourselves that every cent goes towards service delivery rather than outside of the process. Then the quarterly report in terms of the alignment with respect to the annual report. I think the biggest issue that we picked up there was it's not necessarily the alignment that we should sort of look at. What we need to look at is when they report at the end of the year, if they've got quarters, we must remember that at the end of the at the end of the year, it's actually an accumulation of all the four quarterly reports. But we cannot take that process through to end. In other words, there are missing quarters where we cannot determine whether there was progress or there were any alternative measures that were sort of put in place to address any identified poor performance costs. If, for an example, in quarter two, the department sees that it's not going to meet its target due to numerous reasons, they can say, all right, for the third quarter, we're going to change the way in which we do things in order to accelerate the rate of delivery so that at the end we meet the target. We can't find any of those issues. And what made the matter worse was that if we only have one quarterly report instead of four, see, if we're having three, we're going to be able to come up to some form of understanding as to whether what happened, you know, or relationship during the process. But now we only had one quarterly report, which made it was a bit difficult to say what is it exactly that was actually delivered throughout the financial year. Thanks, Chair.
I see let me. I'll already call that what I mean, and then there'll be a follow up by you, Honorable Speaker. Or you wanted to make a follow up first before? Okay.
Okay. My apologies for this. I remember the question now.
Yeah, okay. Just take it easy. You were still saying, and.
Yes, and on special pension, he has partly covered that, but I wanted to know whether National Treasury, when they were discussing this one, they were aware of the Schedule 1 offer. Because previously, when we were amending the legislation, we said there were issues that the political parties lied to National Treasury about the conduct that applied.
You were not on record, was it in purpose?
Yes. No, I'm joking.
You'll have to repeat yourself. Okay, next time. You have heard. You can respond to those questions. After that, Madamine will come. Just respond to the follow-up question.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Yes, we did engage National Treasury on the missing quarterly reports. And the response we got from them was that they were actually preparing the monthly reports, which they actually sort of table and discuss among themselves. But if you look at those monthly reports, it doesn't carry sufficient information as required in terms of the quarterly reports. So we're fully engaged, they are fully aware of the matter, and actually sort of recommended to them going forward that even if they do prepare those monthly reports, they need to have these quarterly reports as required. Then the second issue of the whether they were aware of the Schedule 1 offences, it's unfortunate that National Treasury is not here at this point, it would have been nice of them to actually answer this question. But based on the information I have, is after they got the report, they were fully aware of all the cases where there was offences, Schedule 1 offences. And why am I saying that is because of all the numbers that was identified, they did manage to stop some of those payments. But the reason to stop some and not all, that's what I cannot answer. You see, had they not stopped any at all, it was going to be a different issue. But they stopped some and decided to continue paying some.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think Utam has actually responded to what I wanted to say. I wanted to say, you know, maybe our engagement was going to be more effective if Treasury was there. With AG, not meeting them like today. But make another day where the AG is there and they need to account on this, because you know we cannot, when the media is there, we start asking about this question when we are driving towards the NTEF next week. It's going to be a very clumsy situation. But having said that, the committee also has to be blamed. Our duty is oversight. Were we also aware about those quarterly reports? I mean, even the last one for the September, which is the third quarter, that one, the September one, I don't know. We also not aware, but we're not saying anything about it. So while pointing a finger and saying what the National Treasury has done, but we also need to look at ourselves and see if our oversight is really effective. Especially, Chair, you know, if you look at the leadership that has been executed by the National Treasury, it's embarrassing. Hmm. Where a National Treasury, executes some tasks with misinterpretation, executes some tasks with poor understanding of internal policies and procedures, that is a big charge. So I am saying, I don't know how we're going to handle this when we are with the media, but I would propose, Chair, that we need to meet the Auditor General, because the Auditor General has executed its task, went back to the National Treasury, and the outcomes after the engagement, they are still not effective. That's my request. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. While I agree that, you know, the committee should expect quarterly reports and it has to exercise oversight, we exercise oversight. We don't perform the job. And we do expect the department to do the job properly. I mean, that's something we really can't get away from. So I accept the fact that, you know, obviously this is an indication that we need to maybe have a closer look, but the fact remains that there were certain things that needed to happen. And, you know, this is a public document. It already is a public document, and obviously not many people have looked very closely at the document. But today, the eyes of everybody is going to be on this document. Mm. And it isn't going to be very pleasant, frankly, because to look at this kind of a number and to see the things that the Auditor General has said in this report, it's a shocking, terrible indictment against the National Treasury of our country that looks after everybody's money. So that is quite sad, I think. But anyway, I just thought I'd mention that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. In the light of what we are coming across here, and also considering the fact that this department has a transversal function, it's for the first time that we are getting a report of this nature. I think we need to maybe mandate the chairperson to, as a matter of urgency, interact with the political head of this department and raise this concern seriously. It's not a matter of political parties, it's a matter of the country. It's not our own, you know, I would suggest even to say, yes, we can engage the minister at other forums as political parties, but on this one, you require a mandate from the committee to actually engage the National Treasury and come back, you report to us, because it is actually unacceptable for this department to be operating in this fashion, especially that there is a new disease. So it's an indication that is saying there is a gap now. So we don't want to say there was a super disease and then all of a sudden it's this issue. We must verify, get an understanding as to what the view of the political head is before we take a step forward. We will be able to say we as a committee. I thank you.
Yesterday we received a report, annual report of FSC, and also the picture was not very good on FSC. There are also issues on FIC that we have not dealt with as a committee. Now the National Treasury,
sure.
I think there's a problem in the finance family
that
needs our urgent attention. Because we rely on National Treasury in terms of putting systems and everything else. So if they fail to implement their own policies, who else will do that if National Treasury can't? So I think it's a serious issue, Chair. My last question to the AG, on the issue of the people that received pensions who did not qualify, can we get a list of those, if it's not sub judice, as a committee, those who benefited and those who did not, or those who were not supposed to benefit?
Through you, Chair, I'll take most of the contributions were comments, which will not necessarily require you. It's more the reflection of the committee so far as the National Treasury is concerned and how this committee would wish to take the process forward. Because by and large, the work of the Auditor General is to bring forward or to the fore deficiencies within the system so that Parliament can apply its mind and make sure that there are corrective measures that will be taken. So I just wanted to make sure that as you respond, respond to the issue that will be more relevant to us insofar as the Auditor General's office is concerned.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be very precise on that. I think the National Treasury is in possession of all those lists, and those lists are actually sort of divided into categories. The ones that got Schedule 1 offences, the one which are deemed to be fraudulent and what, so the list are available. National Treasury is in possession of the list.
Any other input? Okay. I think, honourable members, we should appreciate the presentation by the Office of the Auditor General to the committee. And I think what we should also consider or bear in mind is that it's not a public document what we have. It's not a subject of negotiation with National Treasury. The committee must just express its views, and if need be, and I think that's going to be the case, we need to have an interaction with the political head at that level, so that we can raise these issues as a committee with the minister responsible. Of course, I will sensitize, but I don't want to take the right of the committee away to interact with the political head on these issues. precisely because the issues that are in the documents now are in the public domain.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we raise them here or not, they will be raised elsewhere. So I think the committee must just seem to be doing its work. And I think one of the things that you have highlighted in your report is what has been treated almost as often in terms of quarterly reports. Not only by the department, but institutions related or reporting to National Treasury. My observation would go even probably beyond National Treasury family or finance family. It might be a problem that is prevalent even in other line departments and institutions or organizations related to those departments. But at the heart of everything is the implementation of the money bills. Because oversight is not something that you determine outside the legal framework. The legal framework is there. Therefore, it is for us as Parliament to make sure that that which is actually envisaged in terms of the law, the letter and the spirit, should be implemented. But I want to thank you for this. It's a very brief, but I think detailed at the same time. Probably we may need to just dig even much better, I mean deeper. The good thing is that even National Treasury itself will be presenting its annual report to the committee and will be able to take some of the issues forward in that space. Honourable George.
Thank you, Chairperson. I remember last year when Mr. Khanyaho was transferred to the Reserve Bank, was towards the end of the year. And I was wondering now why this is happening, and then also, what about succession planning, and was it a good idea, etc. Now, this obviously occurred when he was the responsible, well, part, you know, the period kind of overlapped. I just want to know from the Auditor General whether they had discussions with him on this, or was it his successor? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think the discussion did take place with the previous accounting officer, but those discussions that occurred with the previous accounting officer were still in brief, because in dealing with the issues of this nature, it's not the issues of paperwork. There's a whole lot of work that's actually involved in this process, especially considering the fact that the payment to the recipient of the special pension occurs outside of National Treasury. So it was not an issue of it can be finalized and wrapped up there and then. These are in fact issues that are dating back as far as when ECJ was still at National Treasury.
Okay.
Satisfied, Honourable George?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think the report generally has pointed us to areas of emphasis that needs to be looked into. And I think it will be important just to get it very, very clear, even on record, the opinion on the audit report itself for the National Treasury. What is the actual pronouncement on this? I'm reading something here, but I just want to get it from your side.
I'm not quite clear here. I'm not sure if I'm with you on this.
Yeah. You see, I want honorable members to be very much clear that we are not dealing necessarily with an adverse report or a qualified report.
So that should be very, very clear. By and large, the audit opinion is an unqualified report. Do I?
Yeah, you're correct here.
Yeah. And these are the points of emphasis within that unqualified report that needs to be taken
that
up.
That needs to be taken up. The issue of non-compliance.
Yeah.
That's correct, Chair.
So I wanted to make so that it is on record as we take the process forward. Even out in the public domain, we shouldn't come as if there is an adverse report from the Auditor General and so far as National Treasury is concerned. But the committee has the responsibility to ensure that each and every aspect and program that has been budgeted for and the resources allocated are utilized in the same way as we actually envisaged when we passed the budget or the vote. So the issue that has been raised here, we need just to make a follow-up. So I thought I should just make this point very, very clear in your presence. Okay. Honourable members, unless there is another point, but if there's no other point, let's consider this meeting to have taken place and just done its business for the day, and then we'll meet in the next round of committee business, which is going to be 2 o'clock this afternoon. And thank you very much.
Thank you.